Hey, I'm Molly Lemon with Lemon Farms in Oakley Union, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
Even with some pretty strong fed cattle prices, the economics remain challenging for Texas High Plains feed yards. I'm James Hunt, and coming up on Texas Ag Today, we'll check in with the Texas Cattle Feeders Association.
Agriculture's cybersecurity was recently a topic at a House Ag Committee hearing. I'm Jessica Domel, and I'll have more coming up on Texas Ag Today.
What impact, if any, could the upcoming hurricane season have on Texas? I'm Tom Nicoletti, and I'll have more on this year's tropical weather outlook on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Carrie Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. Recovery efforts continue to deal with the fallout of the Texas Panhandle wildfires. John Haley ranches in Canadian, Texas, an area hard hit by the fires. He says their losses were extensive, but things are looking up.
They're looking a lot better. Green grass is good for the soil. We've seen a lot of that. We just received a little bit of rain throughout the Panhandle, pretty widespread from a half inch to over 2 inches. That's really good for everybody's attitudes. And there's still a lot of donations that have been coming in to the area, fencing, feed supplies. It gives you hope for this world that, you know, there's people out there that really care for the industry that we do, and they've been very fortunate with their time, their donations.
So, John, what's the greatest need right now?
Just moving forward here, it's going to be getting those fences up and operational so guys can make that decision whether they're going to bring their livestock back to their home ranches or they're going to keep them out on other pasture. I know, you know, rain is going to dictate a lot of that, and guys are going to be left with decisions coming up. So if there's people out there that have pasture that they aren't going to utilize throughout the state, I think those are going to be needs that guys may have cattle placed here currently. But going down into the summer, as things change, producers are going to have to make some tough decisions on whether they can bring those livestock back, either liquidate them. Thankfully, we're in a good market to do so, or take them to some lease pasture.
That's John Haley with Haley Brothers LLC in Canadian. National Sorghum Producers is now accepting entries for its 2024 National Sorghum Yield Contest.
The contest recognizes farmers on a state and national level. There are east and west regions for the following categories: irrigated dryland, dryland no-till, and dryland tillage. There is one overall winner for food grade. The goal of the contest is to increase growers' yields, encourage shared knowledge between growers to enhance management, and identify growers who excel in each state and across the U.S. The winners will be recognized at the 2025 Commodity Classic in Denver. Entry details are available at sorghumgrowers.com. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
The Texas Natural Resources Conservation Service announced an additional fiscal year 2024 sign-up for the National Water Quality Initiative offered through the EQIP program. NRCS Texas will consider applications received by May 17th. The purpose of the program is to work with agricultural producers to improve water quality by reducing runoff of sediment, nutrients, and pathogens into surface waters. If you'd like more information on the program sign-up, contact your local NRCS office. Fed cattle prices remain strong, but James Hunt tells us Texas feed yards are finding it challenging to make a profit.
Well, every month we stop by the offices of Texas Cattle Feeders Association in Amarillo to visit with Brady Miller. So, Brady, when we had our conversation 4 weeks ago, cattle feeders in the Texas High Plains and the surrounding region were selling fed cattle at a cash price of $1.86 a pound. a very good price, historically speaking, but with input costs also running very high, cattle feeders were seeing losses of about $200 to $250 per head on a cash basis. So what's the situation right now in terms of fed cattle prices and the margins?
Yeah, so James, we traded cattle last week at 182 in the panhandle, 184-ish in the north. When I say the north, I'm talking about the Nebraska, Iowa type markets. So running a little bit behind what they would be trading cattle at, but we traded at 182. With the 182 market, that would put us in the red. We'd be losing somewhere around $150 per animal today on a cash basis. So a little bit better, lower price, as I mentioned. You would think with a lower price that our losses would be going the other direction. But as you look at the averages, it all depends on what the market's doing and the input cost and what you're buying to put these cattle in the yard at.
Yeah, you would have to assume that since the fed cattle price came down a bit, you'd have to assume that what we saw was maybe some relief on input costs.
That would be true. And daily, weekly, monthly, you have to watch what the feeder prices are doing and making sure that you're buying these cattle right. Because if you don't buy these cattle right going in the yard, then you can have pretty big losses coming out whenever they go to harvest.
Once again, that's Brady Miller with the Texas Cattle Feeders Association. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
Agriculture cybersecurity was the topic of a recent House Ag Committee hearing. Jessica Domel has the story.
Just as American farmers and ranchers work to protect the biosecurity of their operations, work should also be done to protect the cybersecurity of American agriculture. In a recent hearing with U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, U.S. Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska brought up the subject as he shared an article called Weaponizing Wheat by Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Carl Sherman.
In the article, Lieutenant Colonel Sherman identifies agriculture cybersecurity as one of the most pressing threats to our agriculture. Russia is a top cyber adversary known for targeting cloud infrastructure, for example. We've had cyber attacks on industry leaders like JBS. We're seeing state-sponsored attacks have caused real-world effects targeting critical infrastructure like grain storage facilities. So, Mr. Secretary, I've been working on a bill for a couple of years called the American Agriculture Security Act of 2024, and establishes research centers that are American land-grant institutions across the nation with the purpose of researching physical, biological, and cyber threats to American agriculture. These centers would be structured and operated like the UARCs that we see used by the DOD, and they've shown a lot of promise with our military.
Bacon asked Secretary Vilsack what his take is on the issue and what he thinks should be done to provide better cybersecurity for American farmers, ranchers, and agribusinesses. Here's Vilsack.
It's not enough to set up a center unless you have the resources behind it. But I think you're right to put a spotlight on this. And certainly land-grant universities are already doing some of this, perhaps not as in coordinated a fashion as they need to. At USDA, we're really focused on making sure that the private sector is hardening their assets, hardening their IT against these kinds of attacks. Obviously, you mentioned JBS. When something like that happens, our role and responsibility is to evaluate the impact on the market of a disruption, a significant disruption, which we did in that case, and to convene the industry to remind them of the importance of investing in protection. There is an interagency effort in this administration to sort of focus on cybersecurity and on AI in particular, and taking a look at the entirety of our portfolio from food safety to SNAP bias to market manipulation to trade policy.
Bacon said the Department of Defense runs something similar and it has been successful. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
The 2024 hurricane season is expected to be strong. Tom Nicoletti reports.
The 2024 Atlantic hurricane season starts June 1st, and already some meteorologists are suggesting it'll be one for the record books. But is it too soon to declare how active the season will be? This year's hurricane season is expected to be a busy one for two main reasons: the emergence of La Nina in the equatorial Pacific and record warmth in the tropical Atlantic. La Nina is a naturally occurring event marked by unusually cooler sea surface temperatures in the equatorial waters of the eastern Pacific Ocean. Strong trade winds blow from east to west during La Nina, pushing warmer surface waters toward Asia and Australia. This causes cold, nutrient-rich waters to well up along the west coast of South America. This event can trigger climate and weather patterns around the world, including warmer and drier conditions in Texas. This, of course, could impact agricultural production in the state. In the Gulf of Mexico, sea surface temperatures are running 5 to 10 degrees above the normal baseline. Temperatures off the continental shelf a few hundred miles southeast of Galveston are in the mid-70s, this according to the latest data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. While it may be too early to tell whether Texas will face direct hits from a hurricane this year, the implications of a major hurricane landfall are stark. Texas, and specifically the Houston area, are often cited as the most prone in the country to natural disasters driven or exacerbated by climate change. The recipe for disaster is apparent if a major hurricane barrels towards the Texas Gulf Coast. I'm Tom Nicoletti with the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
As the wheat crop heads out, it's looking pretty good, but the best marketing plan may be for wheat already harvested. Hello, I'm Barry Mahler, and I have the story in today's report.
And corticosteroids are the most common drugs injected into the joints of performance horses. Veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd has more on that coming up.
These stories, plus a look at the markets, are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include, but are not limited to, livestock, feed, fences, and equipment. Additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications must be submitted by May 31st to your local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
We're the number one rated farm and ranch radio network in Texas. This is Texas Ag Today on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
The Rolling Plains wheat crop is heading, and it looks pretty good. Barry Mahler has more from North Central Texas.
Well, wheat is nearly fully headed here on the Rolling Plains, and we're beginning to get an idea of what the crop might offer. Now, there's an old saying in farm country that wheat will promise more and produce less than any crop you can grow. Or is it promise less and produce more? Well, you know how old sayings go. Don't get excited before the combines run, because there are still several things that can go wrong. Let's see, hail, fire, wind, freeze, drought, you know, the regular things that happen here in Texas. But right now, there's some pretty good-looking wheat that's out there in the field. The interesting part of the story is that the most profitable wheat has probably already been harvested before it was fully headed out. You see, wheat's a multi-use crop. It can be raised for grain, grazed by livestock, baled for hay, even chopped for silage. And this year, the best use may be in some way getting it marketed through cattle. Wheat that's grazed is usually stocked with 400 to 500 pound yearlings in the late fall, say about Thanksgiving, grazed through the winter until it begins to mature in the spring. Now, the cattle normally gain 2 pounds per day. They can actually do better than that sometimes. And the level of return on the cattle depends on whether a person owns the cattle or takes them in on the gain. There's several different ways to do it. But still, with the price of cattle near all-time highs right now, that gain is worth a lot, and proper stocking rates will generate more income than the current $4.30 cash grain price, and a producer can avoid the harvest costs and maybe even a herbicide and fungicide treatment. There are quite a few people smiling right now as cattle trucks are rolling down the road, cattle are being shipped, and gains are reported to be good. Now, in our nearby dairy community of Windthorst, many acres are chopped for silage, and those acres have a lot more value to a dairyman as it ensures a good high-protein source for later in the year at a fixed cost without a lot of the freight. Many ranchers have found wheat hay cut and baled properly is not only nutritious for their cattle, but the cows really like it, so it's always good to bale some when the economics work out. The point in all this is that the grain markets have been in decline for a while now, and we don't know what the wheat price will be here in late May and early June when the combines run, but about $4.30 per bushel is what's being offered for contract right now, so the price is not good. It's going to make it hard to show a profit, even with a good yield. So our producers continue to find an alternative to selling cash grain, and using cattle seems to be the best way this year. Reporting from Rolling Plains of Texas, I'm Barry Mahler for Texas Ag Today.
Corticosteroids are the most common drugs injected into the joints of performance horses. But Dr. Bob Judd says the procedure may affect blood insulin levels.
Inflammation of the joints and arthritis are likely the most common problems of performance horses. Because of this, most common treatment for joint inflammation is the injection of the affected joint with a corticosteroid, as these are generally very effective and less expensive than some of the other options. Corticosteroids, commonly just called cortisone, are a great anti-inflammatory, but have some significant side effects, as some veterinarians believe cortisone can lead to laminitis in some horses when given orally or when injected in the muscle or vein. However, the effect of injecting cortisone into joints was considered by many to be safe, as the drug was contained in the joint, but there have been few studies to prove this opinion. A recent study was performed which looked at the effect of injection of a type of cortisone called triamcinolone on blood insulin and glucose levels. The most common cause of laminitis is increased insulin levels in the blood, and this could be detrimental if the horse had equine metabolic syndrome or Cushing's disease. The study involved 10 normal horses that were injected with triamcinolone in one joint, and insulin and glucose levels were measured from injection to 3 days post-injection. Results indicated blood insulin and glucose concentrations were increased at 6 hours after injection and again at 48 hours after injection. The importance of this is that if you have a horse that is overweight, has equine metabolic syndrome, or has Cushing's disease, an injection of cortisone in a joint could lead to laminitis. I'm Dr. Bob Judd on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feed, fences, and equipment. Unreimbursed additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications for assistance must be submitted by May 31st to a local county farm bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Sometimes you love them, sometimes you cuss them. Here's a look at the markets on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Tuesday. It was another strongly higher trading. Cattle futures, both live and feeder cattle, making gains. April live cattle up $1.20, closing at $181.50. June up $1.90, $175.72. With August live cattle up $1.80, $172.92. Same thing on feeder cattle. April feeders up 80 cents, $240.35. May up 297 at 240.97. August feeder cattle up 257, closing at 252.35. Cash fed cattle sales quiet for the week so far. No bids reported from the packers, but we do see feedlots here in the Southern Plains asking 184. Boxed beef prices were mixed. Choice down 259 at 298.29. Select up $1.31, 292.65. Now let's check the auction barns. Let's walk those pens with Larry Marble.
Today we're with Russell Heller from Lexington Livestock Commission Company. We speak to him every Monday about his sale he has each and every week on Saturday there in Lexington. Russell, how was that last Saturday sale?
Yes, sir. Had a good sale, 800 total head with 89 cows.
Can you walk the pens with us?
All right. On the thinner packer cows, 85 to 110, and the better cows, 111 to 140. On the steering bull calves, 3 to 400 pounds, 220 to 395. 4 to 5 weights, 215 to 375. 5 to 6 weights, 210 to 325. 6 to 7 weights, 205 to 270. 7 to 8 weights, $2 to 255. On the heifers, 3 to 400 pounds, $2 to 360. 4 to 5 weights, 195 to 325. 5 to 6 weights, 190 to 275. 6 to 7 weights, 185 to 250. 7 to 8 weights, 180 to 235.
How many noses did you count?
800 even.
What are you anticipating for this next Saturday sale, Russell?
I know one man, he's going to have 25 Charland black calves. They'll probably weigh 450 to 575, and that's all that I have so far.
Well, it's a good start to a great sale here in less than a week there in Lexington. Russell Heller, tell everybody how to contact you.
Yes, sir. You can get me on the sale. That number is 979-820-7002.
Russell, we appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
You bet. Talk to you later.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Neighbor, I guess it's about time to tell you goodbye also. Thanks for listening to us today. Good day to you.
Back over to the futures market now. Lean hogs finishing higher. May hogs up 40 cents, 94.72. June up 37 at 102.82. Class 3 milk finished higher. April milk up 5 cents, 15.49 a hundredweight. The May contract up 41 at 17.27 a hundred. Somewhat of a meltdown in the cotton trade. We saw triple-digit losses across the board. A lot of speculator and producer selling in the market, pushing prices down. We also have the fact that both Brazil and Australia have big quantities of cotton on the market right now at cheaper prices. May cotton down 164 points, closing at 81.29. July down 206, 83.09, with new crop December cotton down 143 points, 79.14 cents. Slightly lower close in the corn market as we continue in that narrow sideways trade we've seen for the last few weeks. USDA's latest crop progress report shows that 6% of the U.S. corn crop is now planted. That's slightly above the five-year average pace. May corn down a half, 431 a bushel. July down 1.5 at 442 and three quarters. September corn down 2, 451 and three quarters. The wheat complex was mixed. Hard wheat finished slightly higher, soft wheat finishing lower. May Kansas City wheat up 3.5, 587 and a half. New crop July up 2.25 at 583 a bushel. Soft wheat Chicago down 2.75 on the July contract. It closed at 564 and three quarters. In the energy markets, May natural gas up 5 at $1.74. May West Texas crude oil up 4 cents, $85.45 a barrel. The financial markets higher, the Dow up 139 points, 37,875. The NASDAQ up 29, 15,913. The S&P up 5 points at 5,067. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A, Texas agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.